Anna Karenina by Leo Tolstoy. All happy families resemble one another. Each unhappy family is unhappy in its own way. Everything was upset in the Oblonskys' house. The wife had discovered an intrigue between her husband and their former French governess and declared that she would not continue to live under the same roof with him. This state of things had now lasted for 3 days, and not only the husband and wife, but the rest of the family and the whole household suffered from it. They all felt that there was no sense in their living together, and that any group of people who had met together by chance at an inn would have had more in common than they. Prince Stefan Arkadyevich Oblonsky, Steva, as he was called in his set in society, was incapable of self-deception and could not persuade himself that he repented of his conduct. He could not feel repentant that he, a handsome, amorous man of 34, was not in love with his wife, the mother of 5 living and 2 dead children, and only a year younger than himself. He repented only of not having managed to conceal his conduct from her. Nevertheless, he felt his unhappy position and pitied his wife, his children, and himself. How awful. Oh, dear, oh, dear, how awful. Oblonsky kept repeating to himself and could arrive at no conclusion. And how well everything was going on till now. How happily we lived. Dolly was contented, happy in her children. I never interfered with her, but left her to fuss over them and the household as she pleased. Of course, it's not quite nice that she had been a governess in our house. That's bad. Oh, dear, 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 what am I to do? He could find no answer, except life's usual answer to the most complex and insoluble questions. That answer is, live in the needs of the day. Meanwhile, he had telegraphed to his sister, Anna, asking her to come and help. Perhaps she would be able to intercede on his behalf with Dolly, Daria Alexandrovna. Well, they would see. Oblonsky's natural ability had helped him to do well at school, but mischief and laziness had caused him to finish very low in his year's class. Yet, in spite of his dissipated life, his unimportant service rank, and his comparative youth, he occupied a distinguished and well-paid post as head of one of the government boards in Moscow. This post he had obtained through Alexei Alexandrovich Karenin, his sister Anna's husband, who held one of the most important positions in the ministry to which that Moscow board belonged. But even if Karenin had not nominated his brother-in-law for that post, Steva Oblonsky, through one of 100 other persons, brothers, sisters, relations, cousins, uncles or aunts, would have obtained this or a similar post. Half Moscow and half Petersburg were his relations or friends. He was born among those who were, or who became, the great ones of this world. Count Vronsky was held to be a fine sample of the gilded youth of Petersburg. Rich, handsome, with influential connections, an aide-de-camp to the emperor, and at the same time very good-natured, a first-rate fellow. As far as the mothers of marriageable young women were concerned, Vronsky satisfied all their desires. He was very rich, clever, distinguished, with a brilliant military career before him, a position at court, and altogether was an enchanting man. Nothing better could be desired. Vronsky had never known family life. His mother, in her youth, had been a brilliant society woman, and during her married life, and especially in her widowhood, had had many love affairs known to everybody. He hardly remembered his father, and had been educated in the cadet corps. Marriage had never presented itself to him as a possibility. Not only did he dislike family life, but in accordance with the views generally held in the bachelor world in which he lived, he regarded the family, and especially a husband, as something alien, hostile, and above all, ridiculous. It happened that at 11 o'clock next morning, Vronsky drove to the Petersburg railway station in Moscow to meet his mother, and the first person he saw on the steps was Oblonsky, who was expecting his sister by the same train. "Hello, Your Excellency," exclaimed Oblonsky. "Whom are you after?"
"My mother,"
replied Vronsky, shaking hands and smiling, as everybody did when meeting Oblonsky, as they went up the steps together. "She is coming from Petersburg today. And whom have you come to meet?"
"I? A lovely woman," answered Oblonsky. "Dear me.
On y soit qui mal y pense.
My sister Anna."
"Oh, Madame Karenin," said Vronsky.
"I expect you know her."
"I think I do, but perhaps not. I really can't remember," answered Vronsky absent-mindedly, the name Karenin suggesting to him someone stiff and dull.
"But you are sure to know Alexei Alexandrovich Karenin, my famous brother-in-law. All the world knows him."
"Yes, I know him by repute and by sight. I know he is clever, learned, and by way of being religious. But, you know, he is not not in my line."
"Oh, yes, he's a very remarkable man, a bit conservative, but a splendid fellow," said Oblonsky. "A splendid fellow."
"Well, so much the better for him." And Vronsky smiled. "But here's the train." The engine was already whistling in the distance, and a few moments later the platform shook as the train puffed in. The steam spread low in the frozen air. The connecting rods slowly and rhythmically pushed and pulled. The bent figure of the engine driver, warmly wrapped up, was seen covered with hoarfrost. The engine, with the tender behind it, moved slowly into the station, gradually slowing down and making the platform tremble still more. Then came the luggage van, in which a dog was whining, and at last the passenger coaches, oscillating before they stopped. The sprightly guard blew his whistle and jumped off while the train was still moving, and impatient passengers began to descend one after another, an officer of the guards, erect and looking sternly round, a fidgety little tradesman with a bag, a peasant with a sack over his shoulder. Vronsky stood by Oblonsky and watched these passengers coming out of the carriages.
"The Countess Vronsky is in that compartment," said the guard, addressing Vronsky.
Vronsky followed the guard to the carriage and had to stop at the entrance of the compartment to let a lady pass out. The trained insight of a society man enabled Vronsky with a single glance to decide that she belonged to the best society. He apologized for being in her way and was about to enter the carriage, but felt compelled to have another look at her, not only because she was very beautiful, nor because of the elegance and modest grace of her whole figure, but because he saw in her sweet face as she passed him something specially tender and kind. When he looked round, she too turned her head. Her bright grey eyes, which seemed dark because of their black lashes, rested for a moment on his face as if recognizing him, and then turned to the passing crowd, evidently in search of someone. In that short look, Vronsky had time to notice the subdued animation that enlivened her face and seemed to flutter between her bright eyes and a scarcely perceptible smile which curved her rosy lips. Vronsky entered the carriage. His mother, a thin old woman with black eyes and curled hair, rose and kissed him on his face. "Have you had a good journey?" asked her son, looking up as the lady he had met as he entered the carriage re-entered the compartment.
"Well, have you found your brother?"
asked Vronsky's mother, addressing the lady. Vronsky understood now that this was Madame Karenin.
"Your brother is here," he said, rising with a bow. "Excuse my not recognizing you before. Our acquaintance was so slight that I am sure you do not remember me."
"Oh, yes. I should have recognized you, especially as I believe your mother and I have talked of nothing but you all the way," said she,
at last allowing the animation she had been trying to suppress to reveal itself in a smile.
"But my brother is not here yet."
"Go and call him, Alexei," said the old countess.
Vronsky went out onto the platform and shouted,
"Oblonsky, here!"
Madame Karenin did not wait for her brother to come in, but on seeing him, descended from the carriage with a firm, light step. As soon as her brother came up to her, she threw her left arm round his neck with a movement that struck Vronsky by its firmness and grace, and drawing him to herself, gave him a vigorous kiss. Vronsky did not take his eyes off her and kept smiling, he knew not why.
"Very charming," said the old lady.
Her son thought so too. Vronsky gave his arm to his mother, but just as they were coming out of the carriage, several people ran past them with frightened faces. The station master also ran past them. Evidently, something unusual had happened. The people were running back from the train.
"What? Where? What? Where? Thrown himself out? Run over!"
shouted the passers-by. Oblonsky, with his sister on his arm, also turned back, and avoiding the crowd, stood with frightened faces beside the carriage. The ladies re-entered the carriage, while Vronsky and Oblonsky followed the crowd to find out about the accident. A watchman, either tipsy or too much muffled up because of the severe frost, had not heard a train that was being shunted and had been run over. When Vronsky and Oblonsky returned to the ladies, Oblonsky seemed ready to cry.
"Ah, oh, how terrible. Oh, Anna, if you had seen it. Oh, how terrible," he kept saying.
Vronsky remained silent. His handsome face was serious, but perfectly calm.
"Oh, if you had seen it, Countess," said Oblonsky. "And his wife was there. It was dreadful to see her. She threw herself on the body. They say he was the sole support of a very large family. It's terrible."
"Can nothing be done for her?" said Madame Karenin in an agitated whisper.
Vronsky glanced at her and at once went out.
"I will be back directly, Mama," he added, turning at the doorway.
He returned a few minutes later, saying, "Now let's go."
They went together, Vronsky walking in front with his mother, Madame Karenin following with her brother. At the exit, the station master overtook them and said to Vronsky,
"You gave my assistant 200 rubles. Please be so kind as to say whom you intended it for."
"For the widow," said Vronsky, shrugging his shoulders. "I don't understand what need there is to ask."
"You have given it?"
exclaimed Oblonsky behind Vronsky, and pressing his sister's arm, he added, "Very kind, very kind. Isn't he a fine fellow? My respects to you, Countess." And he remained behind with his sister, seeking her maid. When they came out, the Vronsky's carriage had already started. The people coming from the station were still talking about the accident.
"What a terrible death," said some gentleman as he passed them. "Cut in half, I hear." "On the contrary, I think it's a very easy death, instantaneous," said another. "How is it that precautions are not taken?" said a third.
Madame Karenin got into her brother's carriage, and Oblonsky noticed with surprise that her lips were trembling and that it was with difficulty she kept back her tears. "What is the matter with you, Anna?" he asked when they had gone a few hundred yards.
"It's a bad omen," she replied.
"What nonsense," said Oblonsky. "You're here, and that is the chief thing."
"And have you known Vronsky long?" she asked.
"Yes, we're always hoping that he'll marry."
"Ah," said Anna softly.
"But let us talk about your affairs," she added, shaking her head as if she wished physically to drive away something superfluous that hampered her. "Let us talk of your affairs. I've received your letter and have come."
"Yes, all my hopes are fixed on you," said her brother.
"Well, tell me all about it."
And Oblonsky began his story. When she heard soft steps and the rustle of petticoats in the doorway, Dolly looked round with an expression of surprise on her careworn face. She rose and embraced her sister-in-law.
"Dolly, I am so pleased to see you," said Anna.
"And I am pleased too," said Dolly with a feeble smile,
trying to guess from Anna's expression how much she knew.
"He has told me," Anna said directly.
Dolly looked coldly at Anna. She expected now to hear words of insincere sympathy, but Anna said nothing of the kind.